Hello, and welcome to the Monthly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be spotlighting some of the comics we got this month, a few from DC, a few from Marvel, and a few from some of the other publishers. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. In this monthly comic spotlight, I'm joined by James, and we're going to discuss some of the comics we got in January 2025. James, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. How are you doing, John?
I am doing all right. Now, it was a five-week month. I got, I think, 46 comics, but I had 1 week where I got 9 comics, then 3, then 15, 13, and then down to 6, so a little uneven.
Yeah, it was uneven. It was all over the place. I think I got 65 comics, and there is some stuff that I cut off that's still tailing off here, but yeah, it was very uneven. It was weird. That's the only way you can describe it. It's weird stuff with three monopolies.
Yeah, I think some of it is, again, just the publishers having some issues getting stuff out on a timely basis. Some of it is January's usually not a great time for comics because a lot of stuff usually comes out in December for the holidays, and then they figure, well, people are either broke or not going to spend as much. So, I mean, I don't expect January to have the wow, this is amazing type stuff, but they really filled that this time with the not wow, this is amazing stuff.
Oh, it's true. Yeah, it was very January. That's the way to sum it up.
Works for me. Well, shall we dive into DC?
Yeah, let's go ahead and do that. I filter my list. I received 15 books from DC.
I got 20.
Wow, quite a bit.
Yeah, it's a lot more than I was kind of expecting. There's one or two that I'm like, yeah, I may need to drop.
Yeah, I have two that fit that category for me. You're not getting them. Two-Face and Nice House by the Sea. Not very good.
Yeah, not getting those. Are you still getting Green Arrow?
I am getting Green Arrow. Did you not like it?
That's one of the ones I'm thinking of dropping.
Wow. Ah, that's where Chris Condon took over, right?
Yeah.
Okay, what happened? Why do you not like it?
Well, first off, it's really different than how this title started.
Very different. It was a little bit jarring at first. But I didn't hate this issue.
Well, I guess there was a couple of things for it visually that weren't working for me. The whole cape and quiver look for Green Arrow is just kind of weird.
Yeah, that I know what you mean with that. Very different and bizarre.
And he's got the hood, the mask, and now kind of this pull-up like gator or something like that. He's got one of the most recognizable faces and heroes for DC. Now he's like suddenly shy?
That was weird, yeah.
The tone and style of the story is just radically different than what we'd had at the beginning of the series.
Yeah, it seems a lot more, I don't know how you describe it, this freshwater killer, street-based crime-fighting, but a little bit darker.
I'd almost say like a street noir kind of a feel to it.
Yeah, it felt like Daredevil to me.
Yeah, Daredevil or maybe a Batman at times. Daredevil, I think, is the better one, though, yeah.
Yeah, and Chris Condon in the indie world has been doing a lot of noir and some Western type things, but like crime mystery type books.
I don't mind that noir aspect of it if this had been how the series had started.
But it's very different.
But we'd started with heavy superheroics, the whole Green Arrow family.
Yeah.
We've got a sci-fi bent to it and all that at the beginning, and now it's just boom, super grounded, and it almost felt a little soapbox-ish at times. And there was something about the credits that it took them the final 4 pages to kind of dole out. It's like, yeah, come on, guys. What's going on with this?
No, I get what you're saying. It does seem like a completely different book. And I hate to renumber things, but this justified a brand new number one almost because it's so vastly different. And there was no buildup and no reset that happened here.
Well, there was a little because they had, was it the annual or whatever that is the transition point?
Correct. They did do that. I forgot about that.
And it had me excited about this run, but this just hasn't delivered for me.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. Me, I don't like it as much as what came before it, but at the same time, I'm enjoying this for what it is. It seems like I'm reading a Daredevil book. So that's how I'm reading it. It seems like the superheroics are almost like an aside and not the main focus of the book, which I know is not maybe necessarily right or anything, but I'm still enjoying it. I'm like, okay, I would rate it like a B for me.
Yeah, this one just fell flat for me.
And that makes sense, because I know where you're coming from, because it's so far removed from what came before.
I mean, they'd gotten me excited about the title. Even the change in direction I was open to, but, and I think you phrased it well, with this justified a new number one, this run.
It really did. And we always get jaded by the new number one, and we're like, oh, we renumbered it and nothing really changed. You know, why are we doing that? I felt like this deserved it because it is so vastly different.
I guess my question, though, was what did they feel was broken about what had gone before that they felt the need to retool it this way?
You know, I agree with you there because I was enjoying what came before and it was fun to read. And then it's almost like you hit the brakes and now I'm like, okay, all right, I can get into this new thing, but I feel like I'm not reading the same story, the same volume, the same anything. And so it was a little bit like breakneck. You hit the brakes, fling forward, and then we take off again and your head's back in the seat.
Yeah, yeah.
Very, very weird. I don't know why they did that.
Yeah, the art's not bad, but again, the whole cape and quiver look. I mean, think about the whole back-mounted quiver and he's wearing a cape aspect for a moment. I'll give the artist credit. He actually made it seem like it could work here. It's just such a bizarre look.
Yeah. I think people who are Chris Condon fans, and believe it or not, I told you I gave this a B. I'm not a fan of his. I've only read one thing, and I'm not. It's not that I'm not a fan. I just don't read his stuff because the noir thing's not my favorite, and he became real popular, and I hadn't checked out any of his books. But I think if people are a fan of his, they will like this a lot.
Yeah, probably.
Because it reads like his other book that I did read.
I guess for me, the problem here is less with the creative team than the editorial decision to switch gears.
I agree. The editors let this happen.
Yeah. It's not the only book that's happened at DC yet, too.
Yeah, yeah. Very true. That makes sense. Are there any other books that you're thinking about dropping besides Green Arrow?
Metamorpho the Element Man?
I'm not getting that, so that's not very good.
It's not working for me, and it's not that it's bad, but it feels like it's focused on telling kind of a hip, groovy, with it story and wowing the audience or something. That they're going for more style than substance, in my opinion. It feels like the very definition of a forgettable story. That by this time next year, unless you're a hardcore Metamorpho fan, people are going to have completely forgotten this series, I think.
Yeah.
I am at the point where I've pre-ordered 3 and 4. It's, I think, a 6-issue series. I don't think I'm going to get the last two.
That's what happened to me with Two-Face. It got a lot of heat and a lot of hoopla around it. I read the first issue, it just didn't hook me, and the second one seemed worse. And it's a 6-issue miniseries, and I'm just like, I don't need to see this out any further. Mm-hmm. I think I'm done. I think I'm done. Why, you know, why waste the money?
Yeah, yeah.
That's where I am right now. If you're not enjoying it, why waste money?
Yeah, and for this, it's just not working for me. And I'm not saying it's bad, and I'm not saying other people won't enjoy it. I think it'll please some people a lot. I'm just not one of them.
Yeah. Did you cancel Wonder Woman already?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Wonder Woman is the other one that I think I kept adding it, and I'm pulling the plug finally. So Wonder Woman's gone. It's the most beautiful art when Sampieri is doing it, but the story is just horrible. The momentum is just atrocious.
Yeah.
I'm done.
It got to the point where this whole Sovereign thing is never going to end. And even if it does, by the time it did, I didn't care.
Yeah. I'm just like, yeah, that's where I am. I don't even care if it happens. I'm done. So what are you enjoying then? I know you cut a lot of stuff. What's working for you?
Some of the Justice League stuff is working for me. Some of it a little more than others. I'm still liking Challengers of the Unknown.
Okay.
They're playing with the history of the Challengers. They're telling an interesting story based on that. So to me, it's a good example of using continuity in the right way.
Okay, cool.
Justice League, the Atom Project. I don't remember or know what Captain Atom's status quo was going into the series because they didn't bother to tell us. There were a couple of things they were doing with the two Atoms, Ray Palmer and Ryan Choi, that I'm like, when can Ray Palmer just kind of float in the air like that? And when can Ryan do a couple of these things? Like, he was changing the molecular composition of things. He was writing up psych profiles on people. And I'm like, this is not the Ryan Choi I remember. Not that I have great memories of it, because a lot of his heyday was, I don't know, 15 years ago. And there were a lot of things going on in these red captions. And it was one or two pages where it felt like they were slightly different shades of red, making me wonder, is this one person doing all this talking, or two people or a group talking to each other, or what? So I felt that part of the storytelling was a little sloppy, and I've got really mixed feelings on the interchangeability of metahuman powers.
Okay.
Because apparently the metagene just means you can have powers, but those powers are not intrinsic to you, apparently. Because, again, they can drop from one person to another. Hell, they can cross, you know, species lines, if you consider aliens to be of a different species than Earthlings. So, what they're doing here is interesting. I'm curious if by the end of this miniseries we'll have straightened out the whole who has what powers. But then we got some of the Atom Project also in Justice League Unlimited number 3 itself.
Yep.
I enjoyed seeing Plastic Man and Phantom Girl of the Terrifics. I thought that was kind of fun. Of course, it feels like they just took her and just said, yeah, we're done with her. Which I'm hoping isn't the case. I was a little surprised Airwave had a different civilian name than I recall him having. They seem to have added a new, like, last name or something, because he classically was Harold Jordan, cousin of Harold Jordan, a.k.a. Hal Jordan, the GL.
Interesting.
Now he's Harold Jordan Levy or something?
Huh.
And this is by Mark Waid, so I'm assuming it's intentional. It's got some interesting stuff they're doing here. Overall, I think they're making a pretty good push with the Justice League. I'm not loving the Inferno plot line, but I'm liking that we're seeing a lot of different characters in different areas and stuff.
Very cool. Now, do you consider Aquaman part of the Justice League books?
Yeah, we probably could. I got the first issue.
Did you like it? Because it's a new number one, and I was just curious. I thought it was okay. I enjoyed it, but the absolute power thing with everyone getting new powers and changing their powers, that's one thing that I'm like, okay, we kind of need to fix this.
I don't know that Aquaman's hydrokinesis was part of that, though, because they referenced that happening a year ago.
Exactly. That's on, like, I don't know if I wasn't reading it, what happened, but I assumed it was an absolute power thing, but I don't know.
I know there was an Aquaman series or two, like Aquaman, that I did not get.
I didn't get it either, yeah.
So I'm assuming some of that may have happened in there. I don't know. They should have clued us in. And the end of this issue certainly, I think, plays into the bigger story going on at DC right now.
I agree, yeah. I thought it was a decent first issue, not great by any measure. I was like, okay, this is decent.
Yeah, I was about the same thing. It was good enough that I'm not going to drop it, but not great enough that it's like, yep, it's on the pull list.
Yeah. Now, did you drop all the Absolute books?
I am still getting Absolute Superman.
That one I thought was fantastic, personally. I don't know if you did.
I liked getting a lot of the backstory on Krypton. It was some interesting stuff.
Yes.
It really felt like the downfall of Krypton, the it's going to go boom, was being filtered through, on surprisingly, a modern lens, making it a little dystopic in some ways.
Yes.
But given the modern context, it's like I would see, I don't say the conspiracy theory and the government's not going to listen, but I can see those aspects to it. I was surprised just how much this Jor-El looks like the classic Kal-El.
Yes.
And not in a bad way. I mean, it looked great. We get a tease at the end that we may eventually learn about the Kents.
Yeah.
I thought this was good. Again, I enjoyed the backstory and Krypton stuff. I thought it was a little slow, and absolutely nothing moved forward on the present-day adventures of the Superman.
Yeah, one thing I'm noticing is they will take an issue with Absolute Superman, and they do one focusing on Earth and then one focusing on Krypton or his backstory. He's not going to be on Krypton forever because it's going to go boom, as we all know. The bad thing is I'm enjoying the Krypton stories more than I am the planet stories, you know, here on Earth. And because you're left with not really knowing who he is when you see him on Earth. For all you know, his name maybe isn't even Clark. You don't know if he landed in Kansas. We have no clue. They named him Clark. He wasn't named Clark on Krypton. We don't know anything about him other than he's flying around Brazil doing super stuff. But I love the issue. I love the Krypton thing. I thought some of it was a little bit on the nose, you know, with the AI taking over the writing. I'm like, you're speaking to what you're seeing here in the comics industry.
It was a little too contemporary.
Very contemporary. And I'm like, okay, you're writing a little bit too much from the lens of what's happening in your life, Jason Aaron. But overall, I think this was a fun issue. I could spend a whole series on Krypton and I would be happy, but I know it's coming to an end.
I'm really enjoying the series, but when they spend this much time on Krypton and don't move forward the Earth thing, and then they spend time on Earth and don't move forward the Krypton thing, it feels like we've got two bi-monthly titles here almost.
That's exactly how it feels. Yep. And it's almost like to get momentum, I hate to say this, but they should have had two concurrent books going on. Absolute Superman, Absolute Krypton. And the Krypton one's a mini series, maybe.
Yeah, because next issue, the solicit implies it's all going to be Earth-based for number four.
Mm-hmm.
And then number five, it's like, okay, let's see what happens to Krypton.
Yeah, because it's slowing it down doing that, and I see what they're doing. But like I said, the Krypton, if they would have done it as a six-issue miniseries and just boom, 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 while they're moving along this main Superman story, I think they might have got some more speed with the story, and I think it would have worked a little bit better for me.
Well, and if they'd done that, they could have shifted the artist for the Krypton stuff to somebody else. I mean, I'm loving Rafa Sandoval.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't think he could do a bi-weekly book, which is how I think they should have released it, if they were doing Absolute Superman and Absolute Krypton, like you suggest.
Yeah.
Because if it's a, okay, here's Absolute Superman, skip a week, Absolute Krypton, skip a week, Absolute Superman, skip a week, etc., that would have given a lot more momentum, because then the Superman stuff would be happening twice as fast, the Krypton stuff would be happening twice as fast, versus we're a ways into this, and it feels like we're still just skimming the surface.
That's how I feel right now, especially with the Superman stuff, because I'm like I said, you know, he stood up, he's flying around, he's doing some stuff, and then, like I said, we still don't know if his name's Clark. We still don't know if he's landed in Kansas. We don't know anything about this guy, this Superman.
Yeah.
And he could have landed in a different place for all we know. Who knows?
Well, and if it's going to go, you know, 2 months before we get back to where is current day Clark at versus 2 months before we get back to where is Krypton at, it kills the story momentum.
Yeah, I agree. I'm with you there. Now, one other thing I want to talk about, Green Lantern, I'm enjoying it, but they did another one of those one-shot specials,
mm-hmm.
which I thought was a little bit weird, but it seemed like issue 19 and with this Green Lantern Fractured Spectrum thing, they're setting everything up for the new core. But we also got that new Green Lantern character, the Lost Lantern. Did that work for you? There was like some accusations that it may have been ripped off. I don't think it was. I think it may be incident.
The Sorrow Lantern or whatever, yeah.
Yeah, the Sorrow Lantern, but I don't know if it was ripped off, but there was uncanny similarities, but they weren't identical.
They weren't identical, but both being powered by Sorrow, having a similar look and stuff, there's definitely cause to question it.
Yes.
I thought Fractured Spectrum, the one-shot, was kind of interesting. Overall, I think we're getting some world-building here that we haven't seen for a while with the Green Lantern stuff, which I'm liking. But for Fractured Spectrum, this one person is just obsessed with the Book of Oa, and maybe there's different versions or whatever and all this stuff. The Green Lantern they chose for that role in the story
yeah.
seemed like the absolute last choice in my mind.
Yeah.
Like, you would have had to go through, it's like, okay, we want to do it with the Green Lantern, hell, let's try maybe a yellow or even a red or, you know, Larfleeze over in the orange or something before getting to this guy they got.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And I'm like, really? That's who they chose? Even if you limited to the Earth-based ones, any of the other ones would have made sense. And there are other non-Earth-based ones that would have made sense. But it's like, that felt like a huge stretch of, we've got this story we want to tell, we need somebody in this role, and let's just roll a die and pick somebody at random.
Yeah, that's exactly how it felt. I didn't agree with it. Like you said, there were many better choices, obviously.
I don't know that there were any worse choices.
True. One thing I did like is they're kind of unwinding. And what, in my opinion, what was a mistake, you know, blowing everything up, and we're getting the reestablishment of Oa, we're getting the reestablishment of almost the central core lanterns,
mm-hmm.
which are really needed for the greater stories that you want to tell. When they got rid of all that and they depowered everyone, I was like, what are we doing here? Because this is not a Green Lantern book at that point when everyone's just walking around on Earth and nobody has powers.
It's a random space opera at that point, yeah.
Yeah, so we're finally getting back to where we should have been, and I was disappointed we got there in the first place, but this is the rebuilding of everything to get back to a fun story, I feel like.
And it feels like the rebuilding could be very interesting, and it's, well, I'm going to mock a few things. It was a good start to it.
Yeah.
Getting the Connor Kent Superboy into the mix, I thought was unexpected and interesting.
I agree.
It's been a while since we've seen Hal's kind of Star Trek-ish ship,
yeah.
but it made sense to have it and use it. Odyssey, the Time Bandit, looked interesting. I thought Green Lantern 19 overall was a good read. I thought Fractured Spectrum was a good read overall. I just, again, felt one or two of the characters they just put in the wrong slot.
Yeah, I'm there with you. I'm enjoying Jeremy Adams, what he's doing over at Green Lantern, so I'm happy to be reading it. Something that when I get it, I'm like, okay, this should be good.
I'm hoping we get some new characters and some new fractal lanterns of interesting types.
Me too. I'm looking forward to that, and I'm looking forward to more of the colors appearing because we're starting to see them pop up.
Yeah, yeah. So I liked it, and I've got hope for it, but we'll see if it lives up to that hope or not.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, yeah. There was one other I forgot to mention when we were talking about the Justice League stuff. That was the question all along the Watchtower.
Okay.
I'm really starting to question the whole big mystery of this series, and not in a good way. And it felt like some of the stuff at the end was supposed to have like all the pieces fall in place for me and stuff, and they didn't. So I'm starting to get a little worried about this title.
Yeah, I can see that. One last thing before we move on. Superman Lex Luthor special, did you get that?
I did.
It felt like a hit the rewind type thing for me.
Well, what got me is Luthor remembers. We knew that was coming. I think they missed an opportunity to tell more with this previous Luthor they just got chucked to the side.
Yeah, I was enjoying it, and so now we're going to hit the rewind. Okay.
Well, they didn't exactly hit the rewind because it felt like a lot of his memories were really episodes of Smallville versus the comics.
Correct, yes.
And the whole bit at the end with he remembers, they managed to do that without hitting the note right. It just felt anticlimactic at the end. It's like, yeah, yeah, we knew this was where he was going to remember and stuff. You build it as the return of Lex Luthor, and you fumbled the ball.
They really did. I think they could have executed better if they would have released little bits of memories and he slowly starts to change versus, ah, ha, ha, you know, here it is.
I would have played up the does he remember, does he not, with clear evidence on both sides for a while.
Yeah.
And have it turn out that he probably is remembering more than he really wants to. Maybe he's even taking memory suppression drugs because he wants to be a good Lex Luthor.
That would have been better.
But gets pushed into a corner where he can't.
That would have been a much better read. I would have enjoyed that.
If we had gone through a simultaneous rehabilitation arc with a fallback into darkness arc somehow, without making him seem like Two-Face flipping a coin or something, but you could have played some parallels there. I liked it, but again, missed opportunities, I think.
I agree.
Anything else you want to talk about in DC?
Nah, let's flip over to Marvel, where Marvel felt very January for me. Spoiler alert, there was a lot of stuff that was just like, eh, this is there.
Yeah, I got 13 comics. I don't know that any of them were really great. Some were good.
No.
Many were not so much. There are a couple here that it's like, yeah, it was either my last issue or I've got another one in the pipeline and that's it, or I need to think about dropping.
Yeah, I'm there with some things. Like, I think I got that Sam Wilson Captain America, the first one.
Uh-huh.
And it's just because it had Red Hulk in it and I wanted to see, but I am so out on that book. It was not good.
It was not the Red Hulk I was expecting it to be.
Yes.
It felt kind of soapboxy to me in places and not in a good way.
Yep.
And it really, I'm trying to think how to phrase this.
It was a struggle to read.
Yes. I think there was aspects of it I found off-putting, and I don't think that was their intent, but it did not work well for me.
It didn't work well for me either.
Not so much that I'm going to yank the book yet, but if the next one's more of the same, I may not see the miniseries through.
No. You know, I would so love to see, and I don't know if this is a bad thing to say. I really don't. I don't think it is. I would love to see Sam Wilson become the Falcon again, because I miss the Falcon and Captain America team-ups. And right now it's Captain America team-up, and they, you know, have to tell the joke. Nobody's getting promoted. I don't know. Make one a major. I don't know. It's just weird. It's just weird having two Captain Americas and multiple Wolverines. But I've said that before.
Well, we got multiple Spider-Men. We got a couple of Batman over at DC. Lots of Green Lanterns.
It's crazy. I'm just like, ugh. We're just no new characters. So we'll just create derivatives of everything over and over and over and over. Rinse, repeat.
Well, I was more okay with this having kind of the second Captain America versus what I would consider the primary one.
Yeah.
Than I was it having kind of the secondary Red Hulk versus what I would consider the primary one.
Yeah, we don't need a second Red Hulk.
And I thought that was particularly foolish, given I think part of the reason this is the Captain America title on the stands right now is because of the movie.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And the movie's going to have the Red Hulk that's not this Red Hulk.
Which is crazy.
It's foolish.
Once again, they're not expecting anyone from the movies to read this stuff, even though they're putting it in there for us comic readers.
But they're hoping they will.
Yeah, this is supposed to be the material that the movies is based on, and it seems like it's not right now. And it's sad.
I think the comics are more being based on the movies than the movies on the comics in some respects.
Which is just sad and completely backwards.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, what's a positive thing that you did read? Because we got some new number ones. I got something positive things.
All right, go with that.
Okay. Two books that I really enjoyed were Ultimate Spider-Man 13, and we got a new Ultimate Wolverine number one, which I thought was decent. It wasn't perfect, but I thought it was fun. It was better than the main Wolverine title, in my opinion.
I'm not getting the main Wolverine title, so I can't compare there.
Okay.
Overall, I liked Ultimate Wolverine, but I think it was a mistake to kill off the Ultimate version of a couple of familiar faces.
Yes, I know what you mean. Yep.
I think they made this mistake the first go-round on the Ultimate Universe 2, on the Ultimate Universe also, I should say, because this is the Ultimate Universe 2. But they did that in, was it Ultimate Team-Up or whatever, and kind of quietly put some characters back out there.
Yeah. The thing that I'm liking about this Ultimate Wolverine is that the X-Men title, Ultimate X-Men, is nothing related to the Ultimate books. It's completely separate. It feels like it's not even part of this world.
Mm-hmm.
And this completely is like an X-Men book because you get Magic, Omega Red, Colossus, Nightcrawler. So you're getting more of the X characters shown in a manner, not necessarily that you've always known them as or they're complete copy and paste.
But familiar.
Familiar. And I'm like, okay, this is my X-Men book that I was looking for when I bought Ultimate X-Men, which it was not what I was looking for. And that works for me.
What's funny is this is Christopher Condon, who's the same one too in the Green Arrow I'm not liking.
So funny, yeah.
And doing a good job here.
Yeah, I think this felt more superhero-y than his Green Arrow.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and I'm liking this Wolverine right now. You know, he's introduced, he's a little more mindless, a little more visceral, like that Weapon X version of him.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that. I think it's a ton of fun, and it was good. It wasn't perfect, but it was good. And then, what'd you think of Ultimate Spider-Man?
Okay, Peter had been missing for 2 months.
Yes.
Which seems like a really long time, and they're not, like, totally freaked out or whatever about all this?
Exactly.
Yeah, what the hell?
Exactly. I'm like, everyone's calm about this. What's going on?
If they're going to do this as if it's a real-time book and, like, a year has elapsed since the thing started, they're going to age out the characters too fast.
Yeah, they will.
The Kraven Hunt seems to finally start this issue, which is nice.
Yes.
The Black Cat shows up and actually, I think, speaks this issue, which is surprising.
Yes, we got Black Cat.
I'm liking the series, but it's slow.
I'm liking the series. It is a little bit slow. I love one thing that really got me, I don't want to say excited, but I thought was really fun. It felt like they're in the Savage Land, so you get that Jurassic Park moment, and that really worked for me. I thought that was so much fun because we're getting the hunt in the next issue, even though it kicked off here. But you're getting some action at the same time because of just the locale. And I thought it was kind of fun, but at the same time, I think it's so weird that he's missing in action all this time and everyone's not losing their mind. You know, that's just bizarre. I'm like, why is everyone just normal? Why is everyone calm?
Yeah. There's not even a, well, he had this coming going around as Spider-Man or anything kind of comments. It's just, yeah, he's gone.
Yeah. That's just very weird. It's off-putting almost.
Yeah. And then we've got the Ultimates.
Yeah.
Where we spend the entire issue kind of establishing the Ultimate Guardians of the Galaxy. And I'm like, are we going to use them much in this world?
Yeah, I was not very excited for the Ultimate Guardians of the Galaxy. This was like a definitely a little bit of a downer issue for me.
Yeah, I felt it was overly cryptic in a few places and world building in a indulgent sense.
Yes. We're throwing characters in there. And that's the same thing that I was thinking as you as like, I don't really want to see Ultimate Guardians of the Galaxy, and I'm kind of like, let's get back to the Ultimates. I don't need this other team in this book. Maybe they're going to play some big part. Oh, here they were, remember? So when the Maker comes back and these guys show up, see, we showed them to you right here. Mm-hmm. It won't be a surprise. This was the lead.
Well, and there's an aspect where it feels like they're spending so much time introducing new characters just so they could get credit for having created them later or something.
Yeah.
Versus actually doing stuff with them now.
Yeah. I wish he would do a better job. Just let's get this Ultimate thing going. Don't give me another team, please. I don't need that.
Yeah. I was hoping they would actually be making more progress on this ticking clock they've got going.
Yeah. Me too. I'm completely there. So anything else you liked?
There were a couple of things that were okay, but nothing that I'm like, wow.
That was a long pause.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'll edit it down. There were a couple of things like Avengers Assemble. Its final issue came out.
Yeah.
They saved the day. It's like, wow, what a shock. And there were like one or two places where it's like, wait, that character, those powers don't usually work that way. I mean, maybe there was this one appearance in this one miniseries or whatever, but classically, no, not at all. But it's like, do I blame this writer? Do I blame the writer of the other appearance? It's like, it bothers me when the consistency of the characters is lacking in a way of, if I don't know what I can expect or not expect from their powers or their personality in some cases, it's hard for me to come back and get invested in the story.
Yeah, yeah.
TVA number two, good, but again, leaning more towards the MCU history than the 616 history.
Very much so. Quick question, are you getting Laura Kinney Wolverine?
No.
Okay, the first issue, I almost canceled it. The second issue was pretty good, which is weird that the second issue is good and the first issue almost makes you want to cancel.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't happen very often. But I'll tell you what, it was basically this issue focused on Luke Cage overturning the ban on superheroes from New York City city limits, because that was still going on from, you know, way back. And so there's this big protest. Some people don't want superheroes in the city. They want to keep it a, you know, people-only zone, whatever, no power zone. Laura and Elektra, Daredevil are fighting, you know, and then they kind of team up against, you know, group. But you get this character, I think his name was Bomb. Remember that mutant who has the ability and it just, I'm going to explode one time? And that's the extent of their power?
Just the one time.
Yeah, one use. And so there's a plot to basically hit this protest that's going on. And what's that going to do as they're allowing soups in? And maybe a soup is going to be used to explode against the protesters. So that's the setup in the second issue. I don't think it's going to be anything big, but I was like, this is a type of issue where you could have something very big happen if that bomb guy was allowed to explode. And it could go down a very dark path. Almost like, it seems like the setup for like a Civil War type thing. That's the vibes you get.
Yeah, but they've done that kind of a setup for that sort of a thing a few times.
And then it doesn't pan out.
That happened with the New Warriors at one point, and it kicked off one or two of the different storylines over the years.
Yeah. So I got excited. I was like, oh, this could be something, but I have a feeling since they did it in January, it will be nothing.
Well, speaking of it could be something, did you get the X-Men Xavier's Secret number one?
I did not. How was that?
Well, it was two different stories. The first one was all Jean and Scott before she took off into space.
Okay.
And I'm like, this isn't particularly great. It turns out, I think, actually, some of this was collected from one of their Infinity comics or something. I don't think I realized that. Otherwise, I probably would have skipped it. The second story, I was expecting there to be this big reveal with Xavier's Secret, and it was going to launch into something big or whatever, and it didn't.
Ah.
I was very disappointed with this. It was a $6.99 comic, and I think if I had maybe paid more attention and realized it was collecting X-Men from the Ashes, Infinity Comics 1 through 6, I probably would have skipped it. I should have skipped it.
That's too bad. That's unfortunate.
I figured it was leading into this whole story arc they're going to do, crossing over the books, chasing after Xavier and stuff. So the timing on this, I thought, was misleading.
Misleading, yeah. Are you in on that Xavier event where he's coming back and everyone's hunting him?
Nope.
Okay, I'm not either.
This was, I think, the final issue of X-Factor I got. I've got one more of X-Force, and I may pull the plug on Exceptional X-Men, at which point I am out of the Marvel Mutant area.
Yeah, I'm getting X-Men, Wolverine, and Wolverine Revenge, but that's a miniseries. I'm still getting X-Factor, but I put in here a note, it's time to cancel. That's literally my only note on the story. Time to cancel it. It's gotten really bad. And Uncanny X-Men, it's unfortunate it turned into this like New Mutant kids book.
Well, for me, X-Factor, the last one I had on pre-order, it's not essential reading. It's not horrible, but it's not great. But then like X-Force, this was a continuation of the previous issue. Not like the next chapter in a chapterized book, but a continuation of the same chapter.
That's horrible.
And it's like, I got one more on pre-order and then I am done.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Marvel's a little bit of a mess right now, just in my opinion.
Well, an Exceptional X-Men was okay, but slow. It's not keeping me in the book.
Yeah. I believe it or not, I did get Magic number one, and it just wasn't good. I'm like, why am I? I don't need to read this. And I got Phoenix number seven. You're not getting Phoenix.
Oh, I dropped that a while back.
I'm still enjoying my Black Order and Thanos.
You're enjoying it. That's fine. Keep getting it, but
yeah, once those characters are gone, I don't know how long I'll like this book.
Yeah.
It may be history. Who knows?
That's funny. Anything else? Move over to the other publishers.
Yeah, let's go to the others. I'm going to filter my list now. Okay. All right, got it filtered.
All right, now, so for my stuff, I highlight the titles with yellow for A material, green for B material, blue for C and below. And this has the most green out of anything. About half of Marvel was in that blue of C category. But a lot of this is, for me, the regular titles.
Yeah.
Gatchaman, Power Rangers, Space Ghost, Usagi, Star Trek, Terminator, Thundercats, Walking Dead. That's the majority of it.
That makes sense. It's weird that I'm starting, I don't even say starting, but I'm getting a little bit more enjoyment from my independent titles than I am from the big two.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just the nature of the beast. And yet I don't think the independent titles can support the entire industry, which is a little bit sad. But it's true. It's just where we are with Marvel and DC. And DC is doing better than Marvel, in my opinion, on the writing side. But I'm getting things from the indie comic publishers that are pretty good, pretty fantastic. I got a new thing called Cruel Kingdom. It was from Oni. And it's part of these, it's called EC Cruel Kingdoms. Like, remember the EC comics back in the day?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a sword and sandals anthology. And I hate anthologies. And this is like a 4-issue limited series. And I read it. I liked pretty much every story that was in there. They were fantastic. And the art was really good. And every story is like, oh my God, the art's amazing. And it was just a little bit of sci-fi mixed in, because the first story had like some robots that were fighting on behalf of people, religious cult, where the people, part of their religion, they can't kill, but the robot can kill because it's not human, until the robots realize, hey, we can kill you guys too. But I mean, there's other stories, a lot of sword and sorcery and stuff like that. And I was like, wow, this is really fun. They said, instead of going ongoing forever, we're going to do this in 4 issues and just get really good creative teams. But each section of the story is a story. So you're not reading 4 snippets of a story that you're having to piece together in your mind over 4 months.
Yeah.
I read story one, and then there's 2 little tiny stories at the end. And then the next book will have new stories. And so that type of anthology works for me. And I thought it was like, oh, this is just something unexpected. It was better than I thought.
Cool.
Yeah. Then there's all the ones that I was enjoying, I still really, really enjoy.
Yeah. For me, a lot of these titles are fairly consistent, reliable titles. Power Rangers Prime had a cameo from one of the Jungle Fury characters, I think. A fun twist on the headquarters from Mighty Morphin was used. We finally get the lead character of Lauren finally becoming this Power Ranger Prime. I'm like, okay, 3 issues to get to the premise point's a little slow, but I'm liking what I'm getting. And I think there was some setup needed to get to that point. The Star Trek stuff is getting ready, but not quite into the lore war stuff where they're going to cross over between Star Trek and Star Trek Defiant. It was a much better month for Star Trek Defiant than Star Trek. We had 2 issues kind of focusing on Worf and his son Alexander as they're going through like this Klingon ritual or whatever. There's a subplot with the Defiant dealing with some stuff of Miles O'Brien's past, but not much time's getting spent there. That's the kind of thing. I think over the course of the arc, you could have probably pared that down and gotten an issue, maybe 2, out of it at most. And it's like, if you're going to dole it out over a couple of months in small bits, it's unsatisfying for the particular issues. And then over in Star Trek, we focused a lot on kind of the backstory of Sisko as the prophet of Bajor. And it had kind of a painted style to the art. Didn't really work great for me, but again, is playing into kind of that bigger picture of what's going on with the titles. So I think they're doing a good job with the Star Trek stuff.
Very cool. Very, very cool. Now, you know I'm enjoying all of the Ghost Machine books.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, right now I think Rook's kind of like on hype. Not on hiatus, but you know how they take their 2 or 3 month break, whatever that's called, a hiatus? I don't know.
Yeah, we'll go with hiatus.
Yeah, hiatus. So that one I'm not getting, which is one of my favorites, but I'll tell you about 2 books that I really did enjoy. One is Redcoat number 8, which was last month, was I think one of the best Redcoat issues. But this time we got Redcoat number 9, and it was another like one-shot issue, and he's starting to have fun with this title, Geoff Johns. Not that he wasn't having fun before, it was good. It was like more like building the character and introducing characters from the history of America.
Mm-hmm.
But he is really delving deep into the Americana stuff. So this one's all on this meeting between Simon Pure and Johnny Appleseed.
Mm.
And I mentioned Johnny Appleseed, and everyone's like heard the name if you're from the U.S., but you don't know a lot about him. And so you kind of learn some of the mythology behind him. And they have some fun adventures in here. Family friendly, deals with like making a giant apple and then a giant worm, and they're kind of wrangling this giant worm and shrinking it back down. But it was a ton of fun, and it's a fun way to teach like Americana. And it works. And family friendly, loving it. And then the other one that was really, really good for me, it was Nemesis Rogues Gallery number 5, which is the finale for Mark Miller with the new Nemesis character. So Nemesis, because of what happened in Big Game, which was his bringing all the properties together.
Right, his big crossover thing, yeah.
Yeah, you almost had to have a Lazarus Pit type moment. And so there was a rebuilding of the Nemesis character in here. And this is telling a story like of almost like an Epstein Island type place with all these billionaires, rich and famous, showing up, getting debauchery going on, and them getting blackmailed. And Miller's saying, oh, all the three-letter agencies are there, you know, to get blackmail on all them. Which is, I don't want to say hilarious, but Epstein was Ghislaine Maxwell. Her dad worked for Mossad. It was literally like a Mossad operation, you know, blackmailing people, because people would go there and then they have you on tape. And that's how you blackmail politicians and people in power. And so Miller is tapping into this. He's like, all the three-letter agencies are there blackmailing the politicians and the rich, because that's what makes the world run. And it was just so on the nose and yet so true to what you could see in the real world happening. And Nemesis is fighting with these characters. The blackmailers are trying to fight back and get their money back from Nemesis. And it ended in just such a perfect way that it almost reestablishes the whole Miller superhero universe to come.
Interesting.
So there's much more stuff to come. I'm really enjoying this book probably more than any of the others. And he's doing good in some of the others, but this one is a high watermark, I think. Very good. It wasn't perfect, but it was a fun read.
I'm curious how many issues he's put out across all those titles all said and done.
It's a crazy amount. He has done an insane amount of work. And then I did a preview spotlight clip for Huck 2, the second volume, which is the Superman of his world. I mean, he doesn't fly. You know, he can jump around. He has some super heroics. And he's kind of autistic. So he's like the purest and kindest person, you know, just really good, but for a different reason than Clark Kent. It wasn't necessarily because of his parents. It was because of he's got some special things about him, and along with it, some superpowers. So I'm just like, he's building all this up to have another big event in the future, I think, and I'm here for it. I think it's going to be fantastic.
Well, and he's building up what I would consider one of the biggest kind of unshared universes out there.
Yeah.
I think he's got to have exceeded the issue count for Astro City.
I think so.
And it's not like there's a ton of these unshared universes out there that have the scope of either what he's doing or Astro City.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm glad he's continuing to have success. He's a good writer.
Yeah, he really is. And when he's on, he's really good. And I do think sometime, maybe the book club or something, or just you and I, we should look at Big Game. You know, even though you haven't read all the books that he's done, it's really good. And I think you'll recognize like, oh, wait a minute, there's the Chrononauts. I remember them.
Well, it might actually be interesting to do kind of a long haul on his stuff, because it would lend itself to, okay, here's a 6-issue or 4-issue series, boom, do it in an episode, but then do them in the order they came out until we get to Big Game, and then kind of have the proper context for it.
I am completely on board for that, because I really enjoy his writing. He is definitely a great writer.
Yeah, and I've enjoyed a lot of what I've read of his stuff.
Yeah. So, hey, if you ever want to do that, I'm here.
We'll have to think about that.
Yeah, it's on the table.
Yeah. So, what else was out there that you found interesting?
Something that's, okay, I told you about those things. The other two things that I'll tell you that I did enjoy, I got the final issue of Kill All Immortals, which I thought was really good. It's about a Viking family. They kind of live forever, and this was like kind of the finale. Zach Kaplan wrote it, and it was really good. And then the other one that I'm telling you I really enjoy, and I know you liked it, but you dropped it. I know that sounds weird, but the cat story, Feral. Mm-hmm. Feral number 9, every single issue works for me, and I think it's not just because I have cats, but it's like reading The Walking Dead with these really cute cats, and it's bizarre to say that. But it's a fantastic read, and Tony Fleeks is getting ready to write a story over at Marvel. I can't remember what it is. It's in this month's previews. And I was like, I got to pick it up just because I really enjoy the stuff he does over at Image. I'm going to give him a shot just with his new Marvel title that he's going to be writing.
I can see that, definitely.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's worked for me. And then, you know, all the Hornsby and Halo, Hyde Street.
Mm-hmm.
That's all the Ghost Machine stuff. And then there's other stuff that's just tailing off that I've been dropping. How about you? Anything else that really stood out?
We got the final issue of Space Usagi White Star Rising.
Oh, okay, cool.
It was a good, if somewhat sad, ending to the arc. And it was 28 pages of story plus an 8-page backup. So, I mean, there was a lot of content in this issue. And the 8-page backup had been 8 pages the previous two also, so that's a full issue for just the backup story. So I like not only the content itself, but we're getting a decent chunk of it per issue. Gatchaman number 6 was kind of an interesting issue. I mean, it was good, but it really felt like a filler issue, but it was done by the regular creative team. The team literally goes out on a treasure hunt out of costume.
That's funny.
I mean, they build it as a story in the vein of Goonies, kind of an interlude for the team or whatnot. And okay, fine, but it had zero connection to the ongoing story of the series.
That's funny.
I'm reading it, and it's like, it's okay, but did they miss a deadline? What happened? I don't think they did, but it was just weird. So, at a $4.99 cover price, cute though this may be, it ultimately, I don't think, matters to the big picture. I think it could have and maybe should have been cut or done as a one-shot or something.
Fair. Well, beyond all this stuff, the other thing that I read is just a novel, but that doesn't count for the monthly spotlight. But I've gotten back into reading novels, and I'm enjoying that, and I appreciate your help with getting me hooked on a Kindle
cool
reader and getting set up on that and showing me some places to get some cheap books. But I know you and I, we're going to be reading a book coming up that's not coming out monthly, but as a collection, Saucer Country.
Yeah, we've got, for the next book club, we're doing Saucer Country, which was a 14-issue series followed eventually by Saucer State for 6 issues, and then Saucer Country, the finale for the 1 issue. We're going to break this up into a couple of meetings. I don't think we've really decided where those breakpoints are going to be, but the first meeting of the book club, I think, is currently scheduled to be March 4th. If you want in on it, pop onto the Slack channel, and we'll give you all the information there. To get onto the Slack channel, go to the main page of the comic book page website. There's a form to fill out. Fill out the form, and then there's a email me button at the bottom of the page. Click that, email me saying, hey, I filled out the form. I really do want to be in the book club, or something to that effect. So I know you're an actual person, not a bot, and we'll get you in there and stuff. I remember reading Saucer Country and Saucer State. I've held off reading the finale because that came out not too long ago, and I knew we were thinking about doing the book club, so I figured I'd just wait until then. But I enjoyed the series. It reminded me a little, in some respects, of Letter 44, maybe?
Oh, I read Letter 44, but I never read Saucer Country or State.
It's different, but it's got similar-ish aspects. A little politics, a little what's going on in space. It's interesting.
Well, that gets me excited because I really did enjoy Letter 44. I thought that was fantastic.
So, this will be fun to do, and hopefully we can get a couple more people involved and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to reading that. Overall, the month of January is a slow month, so we both didn't get that many books, and for some reason, it seems like it's always a breather month for the whole industry, so I'm looking forward to reading some Saucer Country, because my Marvel and DC was kind of, it was okay. Indie books, they're still pulling through for me, but even then, there's a lot of titles on hiatus from writers taking the holidays off.
Yeah, it's usually kind of quiet in January and February and stuff.
Yeah.
But I don't know if things are going to pick up this year or not, given what's going on with Diamond, so we'll see.
Yeah, given what's going on with Diamond, I'm fingers crossed. I got my catalog, I'm hugging it.
I think a lot of publishers are going to be conservative right now, as are stores and stuff, so I would expect for a little bit of time, as things kind of figure itself out, there will be a little less material coming out until stuff stabilizes.
Yeah. My fingers crossed for a good, happy, soft landing for everyone out there that's feeling the impacts of that.
Absolutely.
And hopefully we get some more good books in February. Fingers crossed.
Yeah. Anything else?
Nah, that does it for me.
Cool.
Recording clips for the preview spotlight episodes is easy, and we've got an open submission policy for these episodes. Please send in clips to support the comics you love as often as you can. If you'd like to get email reminders for the preview spotlight episodes, you can join the emailing list on the main page of the comicbookpage.com website. The deadline is typically the second Saturday of the month at 9 a.m. Check the main page of the website for more information and the exact deadline for the next preview spotlight.
thanks for listening to this episode. If you liked this episode, please spread the word about the Comic Book Page podcast by telling your friends and posting a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And please, join our Slack community and let us know what you thought of this episode. I do this podcast because I enjoy talking about comics. So let's talk about comics. The show notes, form, and instructions for how to join our Slack channel can be found at www.comicbookpage.com. The opinions of the co-hosts and guests are their own. The Comic Book Page podcast is copyright John Mayo. And thanks again for listening.